McCain is a member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee holding confirmation hearings today on Donald Trump's choice for Secretary of State.
How much information do you have about financial connections between President-elect Trump, the Trump family or Trump organizations, and Russian individuals or organizations or the Russian government?
I have no knowledge.
And if I asked you the same question and I substituted Turkey, China, Pakistan, or Japan for Russia in that question, would your answer be the same?
I have no knowledge.
Do you lack the knowledge to answer my question, or are you refusing to answer my question?
A little of both.
So I gather from your answer that you'll then have no way of knowing how actions proposed by a President Trump regarding those countries or others would affect his personal or family financial interests.
I have no knowledge.
How is a Congress or the American public supposed to fully judge the actions, official actions, proposed by a President Trump if we lack basic information about how those actions may benefit his personal finances?
Now, that's a question that others will have to address, Senator.
You're aware that government leaders of many of the countries that you dealt with in your capacity as CEO of ExxonMobil have used their positions of leadership to greatly advance their personal wealth while they were in office, correct?
I have no direct knowledge of that.
But you've read press accounts, for example, about folks like Vladimir Putin or the leaders of Equatorial Guinea and other nations suggesting that they have amassed great personal wealth while in office, correct?
I'm aware of the press reports.
Do you think that such behavior by a head of government is in accord with values of the United States or contrary to U.S. values?
If the reports are true, and there has been inappropriate taking of funds that belong to the rightfully to the government, and that is not provided for under the government's laws, then that would be contrary to our values, which are to respect the laws.
Should Congress be diligent to make sure that federal officials, including the president, do not use their public positions to amass personal wealth while in office?
That is the standard in the United States, yes, sir.
Without full disclosure of the president of all his financial interests, isn't there a chance that you might be across the table in a negotiating setting, say with Russian officials, who know more about the president's financial interests and exposure than you do?
Not to my knowledge.
If that was the case, wouldn't that put America and our national interests at somewhat of a disadvantage?
If it's not to my knowledge, it isn't going to change the way I'm negotiating with them.
But if someone on the other side of a negotiating table, you've been in negotiations, has more knowledge than you do, is that not something that could put you at a disadvantage?
I think as long as the objective of the negotiation is clear, what are we trying to achieve, that's all that matters. If you achieve the objective, the art of negotiating is just how you achieve that objective.
I want to switch and ask you some questions about climate following up on Senator Udall. We talked about this in my office. There's been a great deal of coverage about ExxonMobil's history with the issue of climate change. There was a recent two-part article in the New York Review of Books prepared by members of the Rockefeller Family Foundation and investigated by an independent team for the Columbia School of Journalism. In 2015, there was a three-part series in the Los Angeles Times, and in the same year, Inside Climate News did an eight-month investigation and produced a nine-part series that was a finalist for a Pulitzer Prize, all on the question of ExxonMobil's knowledge of basic climate science. These articles conclude the following, and then I'm going to ask you some questions. One, ExxonMobil concluded as early as the 1970s that pollution from CO2 released by the burning of fossil fuels was affecting the climate in potentially destructive ways. Two, despite this knowledge, ExxonMobil took public positions against the scientific consensus regarding climate science. Three, ExxonMobil funded outside organizations that publicly denied, downplayed, and obscured the scientific consensus. And four, ExxonMobil, despite claims to the contrary, continues to provide funding, if at a lower level, to outside groups that deny, downplay, or obscure the scientific consensus. Are these conclusions about ExxonMobil's history of promoting and funding climate science denial, despite its internal awareness of the reality of climate change during your tenure with the company, true or false?
Senator, since I'm no longer with ExxonMobil, I'm in no position to speak on their behalf. The question would have to be put to them.
As we discussed in the August 24 meeting, there is the potential for our research to attract the attention of the popular news media because of the connection between Exxon's major business and the role of fossil fuel combustion in contributing to the increase of atmospheric CO2. Our ethical responsibility is to permit the publication of our research in the scientific literature. Indeed, to do otherwise would be a breach of Exxon's public position and ethical credo on honesty and integrity. And I would like to introduce that record, that letter for the record.
Without objection.
I would like to also introduce an op-ed series produced by ExxonMobil in 2000, and I will read the following. Geological evidence indicates that climate and greenhouse gas levels experience significant natural variability for reasons having nothing to do with human activity. Against this backdrop of large, poorly understood natural variability, it is impossible for scientists to attribute the recent small surface temperature increase to human causes. And I would like to introduce that.
Without objection.
Mr. Tillerson, one last subject. I know you're familiar with the use of the phrase resource curse to describe the phenomenon whereby oil-rich countries often find that their abundance of natural resources actually impedes development of a diverse economy and promotes authoritarianism, violence, environmental despoliation, poverty, and corruption. That's not an iron law, but that has been a much-discussed topic in economic literature since the early 1990s. ExxonMobil does business in many countries, Chad, Equatorial Guinea, Nigeria, Indonesia, Angola, that have suffered through this phenomenon. I would like you to talk about, as Secretary of State, where we have a development portfolio that tries to help nations raise sustainable economies, how will you work with nations that have suffered under this resource curse, and how will you work with them to make sure they respect human rights, the rule of law, and our longstanding commitment to transparency and anti-corruption measures?
Good question, succinct answer, please.
Well, there's a lot of opportunity through our USAID programs to strengthen the institutional capacities and set standards of expectation in the developing part of the world, including those that have resource wealth.
Virginia's Democratic Senator Tim Kaine questioning Trump's choice for Secretary of State Rex Tillerson in hearings before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Charles Fishburne, WCVE News.